You're listening to Band Geek with Richie Castellano on the Riotcast Network. Riotcast.com.
What's up, guys? Richie here, and this is Band Geek episode 45. By incredibly overwhelmingly popular request, today's very special guest is the frontman of Blue Oyster Cult, Mr. Eric Bloom. I'm assuming all of the Band Geek listeners are BOC fans, but just in case, here's a little background info. Eric has been with Blue Oyster Cult for over 40 years, and they've toured the world in that time. During their incredible recording career, the band produced three huge rock radio hits and sold over 24 million albums worldwide. Even though Blue Oyster Cult's heyday was in the 70s and 80s, they've still maintained a steady touring schedule and have become pop culture icons thanks to numerous references in movies and TV. The most popular reference is probably Saturday Night Live's More Cowbell sketch with Christopher Walken and Will Ferrell. Blue Oyster Cult has even captured younger listeners with appearances in video games like Rock Band, Guitar Hero, and Prey, which is, I think, a first-person shooter. Actually, I played that game. They were on the jukebox that you can play or something. It was really cool. But anyway, I met Eric in 2000 when I started working for the band as a substitute front-of-house sound engineer. 4 years later, he asked me to join the band to replace Danny Miranda, who went off to play with Queen. I've been playing with BOC for almost 11 years now, and it's an honor to have Eric on the show. This episode is going to be a little different than what we usually do. This is going to be more like a traditional podcast. So we didn't get to do any playing, but instead, Eric told us a lot of great stories that I think you'll really enjoy. Before we get started, let's take care of some business. Please continue to support Band Geek by using our Amazon link. We know a lot of people shop at Amazon. If you take this one extra step before you start shopping, it'll help us tremendously. Go to www.riotcast.com/bandgeek, and at the top of the page, you'll see an Amazon banner. Click that before you do your shopping, and then when you check out, a small percentage of your purchase goes to supporting the show, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. And it's really been helping us, guys. So thank you for that. We appreciate that, and please continue to do that. One more plug, Band Geek Live. Yes, we're doing a live podcast on July 19th at Katie's in Smithtown. That's in Long Island, New York. So we're going to have the core band. We're going to do a lot of our little bits that we do. But it's going to be like a gig for the most part, aside from a few games and giveaways and stuff like that. We have special guests planned. It's going to be a really fun night. Again, that's July 19th at Katie's in Smithtown. So that's it. Enjoy the show.
Schmata.
Yeah. Well, that's just because of Danny.
Schwitz.
Hey, turn that power strip on.
We're just in
the...
Well,
the Schwitz.
I think when we turn the lights down.
The lights off here.
Well, they're all derivative Mensch. Of German words, right?
Mensch, like, yes. How about a maven? Oh, you know what a maven
plug that
is?
Light in, Andy. The one on the round.
They're like a weird slang of like Polish, German, Hebrew, like...
What is?
Yiddish.
No.
Isn't it?
No. Yiddish is a Germanic... alternative language that the Jews use. It's a inherent Jewish language.
No,
it's
I know code. That, but wasn't it derived from...
Well, you'd have to go back. You know who spoke perfect Yiddish? Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy.
Oh. Really?
Yiddish and Hebrew.
Yeah, I know there's
fluent,
a lot of roots in...
Fluent in both.
German.
All right, when are we starting here?
We started.
All right.
Welcome to Band Geek. I'm Richie Castellano. Today with me is my co-host, Jarrett Pressman.
Hello.
Andy Ascalise is joining us.
Are we videoing?
No video.
No video. Okay.
My wife, Anne-Marie.
Hi.
And where did Brandy go?
I was like, you honestly wait for me to leave to do the intro?
You're wearing all black in the shadows like Batman.
That's why you bought this house. Those steps just designed to be. Doesn't matter.
Disappear into the distance.
Yes.
Our special guest today. I'm very excited again. Eric Bloom! Now,
how you doing?
Eric's catching us on a technical weakness because I'm trying to get the hockey game on my iPad so we can stay up to date.
Richie doesn't sports, so he has no idea what he's doing right now.
He doesn't sports?
I had to first unblock the sports channel before before I could get the hockey game.
Well, so first, let's jump back. First, you had to look up sports in the dictionary.
Yeah. Hockey's the one with the sticks and the ice, right?
Yep.
Yes. We went to a hockey game.
We did go to a hockey game. So, Eric, thank you for joining us, even though there's a hockey game on tonight.
Yes. Matter of fact, we're starting recording exactly at the beginning of the game.
I wonder
so
why...
that's how much...
Let's race them.
I am giving up.
Not half the
to
game.
To be here with you and all your friends here tonight.
Well, just like the hockey game, once we're about an hour in, we'll still be in the exact same place we started with no score, nothing accomplished.
Too much.
No, I have the Fios mobile app open.
I can see what's happening, you know.
A play-by-play?
Sort of graphically here.
But this is bullshit. Like, we paid for this. You were supposed to be able to mirror the television.
That's a good podcast. Call up Verizon.
That's a terrible podcast.
Hello, I can't get the hockey game.
You sure you have one of our packages?
I do have I got a package for you right here.
I got your package right here.
Sir, I'm going to place you on hold for using that kind of tone.
Oh! Hey,
I got something for you to hold right here.
Eric came over today to
play.
Well, to play, but he has a Reverb store. For those of you who don't know what Reverb is, I think it's the used division of Chicago Music Exchange. Is that correct?
I believe that's true.
They have a website. It's sort of like eBay, but the problem with eBay now is when eBay started, everybody's like, oh, great, auctions. Oh, I really want this guitar. I'm going to bid $400 on it. Oh, look, someone outbid me. I might as well up the bid. And then after about a year of that into eBay, everyone realized, wait a second. If I wait to the last 5 seconds of the auction, I can get this thing for the lowest possible price.
Mm-hmm.
So now I feel like bids on eBay are useless. Like, no one bids anymore. Like, you'll put something up there, and, you know, until the last, or even 2 seconds of your bid, you'll see no activity.
Uh-huh.
So what Reverb does is they have, you can put it as a fixed price or make an offer. Like, when I sell stuff, I have a Reverb store, and I sell, like, odds and ends for my studio. It's just stuff I'm not using anymore. Like, I just sold the old cymbals that we were having, because that we were using.
Oh.
Because, oh.
Excuse me.
Because Andy didn't like the sound of my metal cymbals, because, you know, when we're recording the podcast with all headphones on, it just sounds like, clack, 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 clack. And it was really fucking annoying.
And we have all our nice Audio-Technica microphones.
That's
that we're
right.
picking it
That's
up.
Right.
Very, very lovely.
And we can hear ourselves very lovely in the Audio-Technica headphones.
That's right. That's right. So I saw... Now, Eric, you're going to be moving soon, right?
I might be moving soon, which is giving up a basement full of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Full of history.
Stuff.
So I was watching something on YouTube about Rick Nielsen. Now, he sold a bunch of his guitars, and he had a Reverb store, but I think he's located in the Chicago area, right?
Well, when I saw the same thing, I saw it online, of a little video of Rick selling his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I called him. He's a friend of mine. And he said, Eric Bloom who? He said, he gave me the lowdown, and he was very pleasant, and we've been friends a long time. And he said he is local to Chicago. He lives in the Rockford area. So he just, they came over, and they videotaped in his storage facility, wherever he keeps all his guitars. And they took them all away, or he drove them down himself, so it was very easy for him. I'm not in the Chicago area, so... I'm doing what a lot of people do. If you go to reverb.com, I was starting to sound like a commercial for them, but like Richie's doing, I'm just going to put up some guitars that I have for sale, and then maybe some other items from my basement that I probably can't take with me when I'm moving to a smaller place.
Now, I know a lot of Blue Oyster Cult fans listen to this, so if you want to own a guitar that Eric played on stage, this is a really cool opportunity to do that. A lot of times... You know, that sort of thing isn't exactly open to the public. Like, I know there are the Hard Rock cafe has some of your instruments.
Yeah, over the years, they've reached out to me to acquire a few of my guitars, which are on their walls. And a few collectors know how to contact me. But this is going to be something a little different. And you can contact me directly through reverb.com. And Richie helped me photograph and videotape some of the guitars today, and that's why I'm visiting. And then the trade-off of Richie helping me do the videotaping,
you have to miss the hockey game.
is hanging out with the Band Geeks right now.
Well, thank you for being here.
Yay! Well, you and I have something in common then. Your
Jewish
guitar,
guilt?
Yes, that's it. But your guitars are hanging up in the Hard Rock, and my marching band uniform from high school is in the Applebee's around the corner on the wall.
Is it really?
Shut up.
It's yours?
Yeah, when they were doing the Port Richmond section.
Are they using it as a tarp or something?
Yeah, they're using it as several tablecloths.
Terrible.
I'm sorry, go on, Jared.
No, when Applebee's opened in the 90s, they went to like all the high schools and they were like, "Can we, you know, we need some stuff to like decorate the wall." So it was, you know, cuz it's all local stuff. Right. And I came back from summer vacation and I was like, "Where's my marching band jacket?" And they said, "Oh, we gave it to Applebee's. We got to go get a new one." And I had to like go down to like the marching band uniform like store.
What's it like in there?
That sounds made up.
It smells like that, the like a dry cleaner.
Like polyester.
It smells like sophomore balls. Wait, so were you like the only one with like a new shiny suit and everybody else was gray and disgusting?
Well, the funny thing was is that I already had new pants because all the other pants were too small.
That's why you can't fit your pants no more, Jared.
That is true story. I'm sorry to go off on a little tangent here. I remember I think we were ordering food at Jared's house or something.
No, you came over, you just randomly stopped in front of my house and rang the bell, and it was you and a couple people, and you were like, "We're going to get food. Do you want to come?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And my dad's like, "You just ate dinner." And I was like, "Yeah, but I could eat again." And then my dad said,
"That's how come you can't fit into your pants no more."
Why does he sound like my dad?
Because he's from Staten Island.
Did he eat all the pie? He ate all the pies?
Oh, I ate all... Okay.
All right.
That's my favorite.
Okay, thank you.
Here we go.
Thank you, Segway Sam.
Nice segue.
Okay, I love Facebook.
It's all right. Eric's checking the game.
Eric, feel free to weigh in on this.
Weigh in being the operative word.
Wait. Okay, so.
Richie's all bothered right now.
I'm all fucking fired up now, thank you. Okay, so. We played in Florida, right? And Florida's fucking hot.
Wow.
All right? So, usually I have like my stage jacket that we all have, and it was hot, so I took it off, and I had a tight shirt on. And okay, maybe I'm a good A or B cup.
Oh, shrinkage.
No, it was expansion, it wasn't shrinkage. The jacket was holding in my A cup, but you know, whatever. What is this, an A or like a B or a double?
No, you're like a double A. It's like small. It's a little baby.
Okay, so anyway, so I was wearing a tight shirt.
He's talking about his chesticles.
Yeah, I have slight man boobs, and that's okay.
It depends.
They're pectorals. Thank you, Andy. Andy, you're my friend.
Are you embarrassed enough by them where you have to like hold a textbook in front of you, or when you walk down the
street? Are you budding, or are they just your cookie pockets?
Well, when you play guitar, you have to make a choice of what area of your body you're going to cover. Either you have it at John Lennon height and you can cover your man tits, or you have it at, you know, stomach height and you can
cover your belly.
Yeah, or if you're prone to random erections, you can put it at Jimmy Page height and cover your junk. So.
So that's why all those like pop punk bands wear them like down at their wieners.
That is the quote of the episode. We should just stop now. I'm done.
But anyway.
Someone text me that immediately.
Anyway, someone posted a comment saying, "I was watching something to the effect of, I was watching this video, and someone watched over my shoulder." And I was watching a video of Richie playing Last Days of May, and someone was watching over my shoulder and said, "Well, it looks like we know who ate all the pies." And the person continues to say, which I thought was a bit unfair. Okay, let's dissect that for a second.
I'm still confused. What are you talking about?
You don't know this story?
No, I know that there was a comment made.
Talk, I can't. You're talking.
Oh, I don't know why I'm so far. I'm trying to look at you. So again, there's a video on Facebook of you playing your solo, and there's a comment below it, or is this a verbal
someone
comment?
Posted the video?
Someone posted the video
and said I was watching this.
Okay.
And someone was
so of their own accord. They were just like, I was watching this.
I was watching this, and then a stranger came up to me, or a coworker came up to me and said, "Well, it looks like we know who ate all the pies, but but that was a tad unfair." So if it's fucking unfair, why are you posting it again?
Why did you
write a transcript of the story?
Why did you write a transcript of it? Moral of the story: Richie looks fat, and I felt the need to inform everybody on the internet.
You don't look fat. You just ate all the pies.
I just ate all the. You know what?
This has been a lovely, lovely joke for the past couple weeks. So thank you for this. It's unfair that you said this. Whoever you are, it's unfair because he didn't eat all the pies. He tries very hard not to eat the pies. But this is the greatest joke
now we know
I've ever heard.
You could fit in your pants, even though you ate all the pies.
So Eric, and you sent me that text, and I couldn't breathe. It was the funniest thing.
You were eating at the time.
So sometimes when Richie laughs, instead of making sound, his mouth just gapes open. He's just like...
That's my favorite.
Wait. This is Richie laughing really hard.
Okay, thanks.
That's what it sounds like. So I assume that when you say I couldn't breathe, you were making Richie not laughing.
It was amazing.
So Eric, when are you coming to Tulsa?
That's a good question. I'd like to go to Tulsa.
I'm
and
sorry.
All the other places people ask us to play.
I've prepared some, you know, I've seen you do a lot of interviews, so I prepared some questions that, you know, aren't annoying to you. I know the deal.
Hard-hitting questions. Uh-oh.
So, did you ever see the Saturday Night Live skit of the cowbell?
No. Bye, Eric. Thanks for coming.
Oh, see, Eric's walking up the stairs.
Thanks, Richie. That was the one thing you weren't supposed to ask.
Where'd the name come from?
I'll go through all the questions you don't want to answer.
Let's see.
Anymore.
What's a stun guitar?
Why do you wear sunglasses all the time?
That's another good one.
What was that?
That's everybody.
Oh.
That's somebody from the Newsies.
Why do you wear sunglasses all the time?
What else you got, Rich?
What's a Dizbuster?
I got asked that just maybe 3 days ago.
Oh, right.
Really?
I had to answer it.
Well,
I have to know what it is now.
I'll be glad to tell you. You know why? Because it has a penis answer.
Yay!
All right, go ahead. Explain.
I'll tell you, though. It's already it's on the net. I did an interview with BAM, which is the Bay Area Music Magazine.
Well, if you don't know what a Diz... we have a song called... Eric has a song called Seven Screaming Diz Busters, which is a great song, but go on.
Yeah, and it goes back to our earliest couple of records. And we had a band house, and which is a lot like Silicon Valley, but with a band instead of nerds. Except we were nerds, but it was before there were nerds. It was just musicians living in one house. And in the band house, it was a sort of a communal place in Great Neck, New York, on Terrace Drive in Thomaston, New York. And not only did the band live there, but band friends lived there, including Richard Meltzer, who co-wrote Burning for You and a few of our other songs, including Seven Screaming Dizbusters. So he invented the phrase, a Dizbuster. And what is a Dizbuster? Well, then what is a Diz? He invented the phrase, I believe, that a Diz is the groove on the top of a man's penis.
Educational.
Now it is educational, isn't it? It's sort of like going to med school.
Yeah.
Now,
I feel like the more you know, Star.
Yeah. You know, the more you know. Wait. Anyway. So obviously, if it's being busted, you're going to be screaming.
Oh.
Ow! I just thought about that.
So therefore, there's.
But there's seven of them.
Well, that's numerology. I have no idea.
As far as we go.
Now, did he write the music to that, or is that...
No, that's a band ensemble, or a Buck, or Albert, I can't recall. But it was... that's where that song, that's where the Dizbuster comes from.
When you were living in the house together, did you write the music together? Were there parts where you would jam into a song, or was
with something? There would be all of the above, from somebody would have the music already, or it would be an ensemble... let's jam and see what happens. It would be any permutation you could think of.
Can you recall off the top of your head like one instance where you guys were just fucking around and you came up with something like just an ensemble compositional thing?
Yeah, like Flaming Telepaths.
Oh, that
was written in, not in the original Band House, because that was a third album. That was Secret Treaties. And that we were in a different band house. We had about three of them. This band house, I believe, I can't recall which band house, but it was written, I believe it was the one out in Eaton's Neck, which is in Long Island. And we had, I think we had lyric. And I was just standing in front of a mic, and everybody was trying to like make a song happen from whole cloth from nowhere. We had some music that people were jamming on. And I was just supposed to stand at the mic and make a song, make melody. Mm-hmm. And the melody just, I said, whoever was coming up with the song at first, the germ of the idea, I didn't like the melody. I said, how about this? And that's what stuck. So that's, just give and take in one room with a bunch of guys.
The lyrics were already written to that song?
It's a Perlman lyric.
Okay. So would he just like drop off a book of stuff for
you
guys?
Well, the way the original germ of BOC started, which goes back to Soft White Underbelly, which goes back to, Stock Forest Group and all the different ins and outs of different people and different personalities. And there were a few different people in the band before BOC. It was a bunch of guys that Perlman saw jamming in a band house a place people jammed in out by Stony Brook University. And Sandy walked in, saw some guys jamming, and said, I have connections in the music business. And that was the beginning of what became BOC. It was many years to go after that.
Now, were you in the group yet at that
point? No, I didn't know them. They didn't know me.
Now, didn't you and I join in sort of a similar way, both being sound men?
It's a long story, and it would take a very long story to tell, and I've told it before, right. But I'll make it brief.
The brief version.
Let's see. Well, to go back to that story, when Sandy walked in on the guys, there were a variety of people in the room at that time. And it was, Alan was visiting Stony Brook, was visiting that jam house with a guy named John Wiesenthal, and Donald was jamming with a bunch of guys. And Perlman heard them jamming and said, I have these connections and I can open some doors. I like what you're doing and I have some ideas. And he indeed did. He was the editor of Crawdaddy magazine, which was an early rock magazine. And his co-editor was John Landau, who is Springsteen's manager today and always has been. So he did have credentials and could get doors open. And a lot of variety of people came in and out of what became Underbelly. Several different people came in and out. And I didn't get in the door until maybe a year and a half later. It was still called Soft White Underbelly when I joined. To make a long story short, I was working in Sam Ash at the Hempstead store, which no longer exists. And I had played all the way through college in different bands, and I was playing in upstate New York in bands that played fraternity parties and local bars and gin mills and whatever it would take to meet girls and have fun and et cetera. So those were the Animal House, the kind of bands that played the fraternity parties. And Donald and a couple of the other guys from the band, including Andrew Winters, who was the original bass player, came into Sam Ash to buy amps, and I was the salesman. And I had taken a picture of my college bar band, which was called Lost and Found, which consisted of John Trivers and myself and three other guys, Jeff Hayes, Peter Haviland, and George Faust. And had put a picture, an 8x10 on the wall, up next to other bands who bought their gear from Sam Ash, including the Rolling Stones and many other bigger bands, shall we say. And I'd snuck the picture on the wall while I was working there. And Andrew Winters looked up, saw the picture on the wall, and said, I know those guys because the singer in Software and Underbelly, I'd gone to college with him.
Ah.
So we started making a little conversation. And one thing led to another. And Thanksgiving Day of 68, I'm sure you remember it well.
Yes.
I got a phone call to come in and do the sound for Underbelly, who were playing at the Electric Circus, which was a club on St. Mark's Place back in those days. And I had a Bogan 100 amp and two columns with 415s in each.
415s?
And, yes.
Well, and that means you had a van.
And yeah, I had a van. I had a van. My first new vehicle was a 68 Chevy Sport van. And of which I was making payments of $76.15 a month.
Wow.
And
unbelievable memory.
Well, believe me, I guarantee you, everybody who has a new car will remember the payment on their first car. And no, all right, at least I did.
I do.
And
$334. Versa.
Well, cars were cheaper back then. So anyway, I had my van. It's a much longer story, but the punchline is I did the sound for the band that night. And Perlman came up to me after the show. And remember, I had a van. And I had a PA. And he asked me if I wanted to be the band's tour manager.
Wow.
And would I move into the band's house and be their tour manager. And I was living at my sister's house in an empty bedroom. And I said, sure. And I was kind of a free spirit, and I said, okay. I had graduated from college about 6 or 7 months before. And that's how I got the original entree into the band. And there's a much longer story of how they tapped me on the shoulder to start singing about 6 months later.
Knowing you now, it's just sort of hard to imagine you just willy-nilly saying, yeah, okay, I'll go move into your house, to a stranger's house.
Well, you know... it's a much longer story, and we could sit here for hours, and I'll tell you all the ins and outs of it, but it's essentially that's it.
Wow. So were you playing guitar when you were working at Sam Ash?
I had a guitar. I had a Stratocaster, and it was... Actually, I think I sold it out of the store, you know, and I think that's why I got fired.
Let me meet you in the back. And
well, there was a guy who came in there from time to time looking for used stuff to sell. And I think I went over to him and I said, you know, I got the Strat.
American Strat?
I couldn't even tell you.
Well, what year was it?
I couldn't even tell you that. I bought it used.
And what year did you sell this in? Do you remember that, roughly?
I sold it in 68.
So it had to be, it was at least a 68. If you bought it used, it's probably a 65 or earlier. Probably,
yeah, definitely earlier.
So imagine if you kept that Strat.
Anyway, it went away. And I think the Jerry Ash and friends got wind of the fact that I was doing stuff that wasn't kosher. And we parted ways. And that's right around the time where I was asked to, you know, move to the band house.
One door closes, another door opens. Yeah. As they say. Actually, it's funny because around that same time, 68, I've heard a lot of Sam Ash stories with my family. Another funny coincidence, not to sidetrack, but a really quick story is my dad went into Sam Ash in Brooklyn to buy amps as well, and Andy's dad was the salesman.
That's right.
And my dad said, I want you to hook up, I believe the spec was 8 Marshall bottoms with 4 Marshall major heads, right? And and Steve, Andy's dad, said, really? He goes, yeah, that's what we use. You know, back then in the 60s, it's amazing. People didn't think to put a microphone right. on a 12-inch speaker. Instead, you just needed more speakers.
Right,
so,
exactly.
So Steve Escalise, Andy's dad, wired up my dad's 8 bottoms and 4 heads. And my dad played a chord, and then the owner of the shoe store next door ran in and said,
the shoes are falling off the wall. Turn that down.
And another story. This might be legend. I'm not sure, but I
And then 30 years later, I met you.
That's right.
That's weird. Over 30 years.
Yeah. But the other legend I heard was regarding why my grandfather opened up his music store. Because my dad bought like $10,000 worth of gear from Sam Ash because he had like a backer and they lost all their backline. And he bought it and he asked them to throw in a set of strings and they wouldn't. So my grandfather heard about this and was like enraged. And the next day I had a music store. Like, you know, bought a place and took all my dad's shit and put it on the walls. So when my dad would go do a gig, the store was empty. But it looked really good during the week.
And the store was called Just Strings.
Now, did you ever take guitar lessons?
No.
So was it all by ear or did someone show you?
To make a long story short.
I'm asking all the bad questions.
No, I don't think of myself much as much of a player. I'm think of myself more as a front man.
Mm-hmm.
When I was like in high school and I had a harmony guitar that I had bought for $52 and the neck started bending almost immediately. people would run and hide if they saw me coming with my guitar case because I wanted to play with them and they would say, oh, there's, you know, that guy. You know? So I sold that guitar and I had a little amp I wish I had back. I had a little Les Paul Junior amp. I think it had 1/8 in it or 1/10.
Wow.
A little like blonde cloth 1/10. I think I might have had an 8. Very small amp that I bought with the guitar and sold them both, I don't know, for like $50 or something, like, you know, in the early 60s, and never played again until I didn't play. I was a front man in all the bar bands in college, never played. And then when I got into the band house and I started being in the band, they asked me to start playing again.
Ah. Because they need you to fill out parts.
Well, they just said, you know, we need these parts filled, so play these chords.
And then is that the same for keyboards as well? Because we split keyboards.
Well, that's another long story.
Well,
I'm an old man, you know. All these stories.
There are no short stories, okay?
I mean, something that happened to me that, you know, took a year, I can't tell in two sentences. During the summer of 68, before I joined the band, I was playing all summer in a bar band in upstate New York. And Peter Haviland, may he rest in peace, he had to go to summer school and our whole band was screwed. So he was the lead guitar player. So we said, what are we going to do now? So the rest of us decided we got to do something, you know. So the other guitar player, George, was going to, I'll play the leads, but who's going to play the rhythm? So we had, in a previous band that I was in, about a year and a half before that, we had a keyboard player, and he was a teenager that lived in town, and his parents didn't want him to be in any band. He was 16 years old, and he had a Lowry organ, which was a piece of furniture. And so he took it out of his house and hid it in our college apartment. So he would sneak out the window of his parents' house and meet us at the clubs. And we would take this Lowry organ in the back of my 55 Chevy and get it to the gigs. You know, it took about schlepping before. We used to take this Lowry, you know, wooden organ, you know, and get it to gigs in the back seat of a car. Or sticking out the back of a trunk.
You might not remember this. Was there an output on that? Could that go into a PA?
The tech side of it, I don't remember now. It's 45 years or 50 years
ago. I'm guessing not.
Yeah.
This reminds me of that scene from The Commitments when they had like the pickup truck. And did you ever see that movie, The Commitments? About the
sure.
Yeah. It just reminds me of that. So you had his Lowry organ.
Yeah, we had his Lowry organ. So when he never took it home. It went back to our apartment. So it was sitting in my apartment. So I would just, you know, in an afternoon or an evening, I would sit and noodle on it. And no, I never had a keyboard lesson. So I would put my fingers down and make noise. And I never had anybody show me how to put my hands down right. And I would watch other guys play a little bit. And I knew, how to make a C chord, but I never knew where to put my fingers. So the way I play, I know it's completely wrong. you know, but I know how to make the sounds. So,
yeah, but you're not one of these guys who just puts his fingers down. You know what chords you're playing. I know.
I know what chords I'm playing because I've learned what chords I'm playing. But I don't play right. I know I don't play right. And I mean, I don't play the way a music teacher would teach you where to put your fingers. But I know that if you put your one finger here, one finger there, one finger there, you make a triad chord. And over the years, also when we're like playing on a record, you know, for instance, there was always a joke with Tommy Zvonchek, who's a wonderful musician, and that I mean, he could outplay me 10,000 to 1. You know, is the way he plays keyboard, and I'm a bit of a hack on a keyboard. It's obvious. But there was always a joke, you know, I played keyboard on Don't Fear the Reaper, you know. and you know, that was always like a gag.
What now, that's when I had to learn, when I moved over from bass to keyboards, I had to learn all these songs on keyboards.
Yeah, but you have Andy to show you where your hands go.
No, Andy just hits my hands and goes, yeah. What are you doing? Stop playing like that. I learn how I'm going to learn like you. And then Andy looks at me like, what the hell are you doing with, what shape are you making?
Well, you were a big believer in the chicken claw.
The claw.
You'd play your triads with your pointer, your middle finger, and your ring finger.
And he's like, use your thumb. Use your thumb.
Yeah, but I had nobody. So I'm.
But what about Alan? Did Alan ever show you any keyboard stuff?
Yeah, well, later on. You know, back when we'd be in the studio or something like that, and Alan wanted to play a... guitar on a song, but basically the way a BOC song was written is we'd be in pre-production, we'd be working on a song, maybe in the band house first, then pre-production, and we'd be working on a song, and just maybe from the get-go, I might be playing the keyboard only because I sat down in front of it when we were working on the song.
So you wouldn't track everything individually, you'd record it as a band?
I'd say yes.
Okay.
I'm sure, not forever,
but you know.
Yeah, maybe... You know, rough, and then there would be an overdub later, you know, to make it right. But sometimes my keyboard part, even though I wasn't playing it amazingly well, just seemed to work anyway.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there's one song I'm playing bass on, and, you know, I'm certainly not a great bass player, but it just seemed better because, you know, I played bass from the beginning, the way the song was written.
That's a really interesting phenomenon because when Andy and I record, we fall in love with the demo. Like, yeah. we'll put down the roughs and we'll say, okay, it's done. And then we'll start, you know, rebuilding everything. And it's like, no. Go back to that shitty drum machine that you put on. That sounded better than this, you know.
I find that very true. Sometimes, you know, whatever the funky beginnings were is the magic of the song.
The interesting thing to me, or the thing I've been curious about, if you don't mind me asking, is, I mean, Donald is a tremendous world-class guitar player. Now, what would, even back in the days when you first started recording on, say, like 16-track or 24-track, what would stop him from saying, I'm going to record every part and do the bass part, like sort of like what Hendrix would do sometimes?
He would bring in demos that way.
Yeah.
Playing everything.
But
very often he would say, okay, everybody's going to play. Mm-hmm. If it was his song, he definitely wanted people to play it the way he visualized it.
Donald came over one day and we tried to write a song together and we basically noodled for 2 hours. But it's just, I mean, the thing I always try to wrap my head around is, and this is an interesting question because I've been trying to answer this and I can't. And I've been playing with you guys for over 10 years. What makes a Blue Oyster Cult song? And sitting here in a room with Donald and trying to answer that question, it's not an easy question to answer. It's not like, you know, it's even like with some bands, like say AC/DC. What's an AC/DC song? Well, it's very easy to explain. An AC/DC song is 4/4, you know what I mean? Oh yeah, open chords, you know, pentatonic solos, pentatonic, and you could sort of almost build it by the numbers. But what is a Blue Oyster Cult song is a really difficult question. Now, when someone asks you, like, I'm sure back in the day when you were first starting, what do you guys sound like? I'm sure that's a question every band has to answer. What is the Blue Oyster Cult sound to you?
Well, we had 4 lead singers, maybe even 5. So that made everything different right there. And right. maybe that was a strength and a weakness all by itself, because there was no defined sound right there. The first three records, which each one did a little better, bit better than the next, had different singers on every kind of song. I sang the most in the first records, and then the other guys sang a few on each, usually depending on who wrote what.
Right. So, I mean, that's... But I also feel like stylistically, when you hear a Blue Oyster Cult song, even if it's, you know, 10 years apart, it still sounds like a Blue Oyster Cult song. And it's just that I have so much... And I'm someone who analyzes music for a living. I have to learn songs every day, you know, or mix music or do something with you know, listening to other people's music. And there's just something so elusive about it that I can't put my finger on. And I don't know if it's... I mean, I think it's partially the lyrical content, and the way the music plays against that is always coming from sort of an angle you wouldn't expect. You know, like, especially the stuff, like the out there stuff, like, say, Joan Crawford. You know what I mean? Like, who sits there and writes a song about Joan Crawford? It just sounds...
Well, you know, there were a few songs that came from outside the band. That's one. Mm-hmm. That came from the late Dave Roeder. And but the fact that it came into the band, you know, sort of made it,
mm-hmm.
you know, into our channel.
Right.
We always are a little offbeat. I think that's a good word for all our stuff. I think that's the main reason why we're always a cult. Yeah. No, you know, I always think of us sort of on the B list and never made an A list. And it's been okay. You know, I can't complain.
One thing I did like about, I mean, even though we didn't really write anything when Don came over here, the thing I did like is when he's in, like, the mode of writing Blue Oyster Cult songs, he does it orchestrally. Like, when I'm trying to write a song, like, fuck everybody, this is the song I'm writing, everybody doesn't have to adjust to it. But he said he was thinking, like, okay, Jules is going to do this, Eric will play this, you can do this, and we'll do this together. And he was building it sort of orchestrally. You know what I mean? Just like... This is the orchestration we have. This is the instrumentation. This is what we have to work with. Whereas I'm like, okay, so we got that, but what's the melody? And that's the thing I couldn't wrap my head around. But I definitely appreciated it, because that's, I feel like that's sort of the nugget of where those arrangements come from. And that's why, and the other thing is, with other bands and other groups I've played with, there are times where guys will sit out like a whole verse. But with Blue Oyster Cult, everybody's playing all the time. And I think that has to do with the way the songs were arranged. It's, you know, everybody's got something to do. A really great arrangement that I like and I think works really well is, I mean, it's a huge song, but it's Burning for You. Because, I mean, say what you want about the guitar skills of it when you compare Eric to Buck, but when you take Eric's part out of Burning for You, I feel like the song collapses. Yeah. That is the part. And everybody wants, especially in the verse, everybody wants to hear that. Once that part's gone, the song is empty. There's nothing to it. And we've had to do gigs where, say, you don't make the flight or Don doesn't make the flight. We've had, like, emergency gigs. And in that case, I'm trying to play both those parts. I'm like, I can't just do that. Bang. Right. The little, you know, the bubble or the skank thing there. Mm-hmm. I have to, with my thumb, try to go, because if I, once you lose that part, it's gone. And I think that's,
yeah.
That really speaks to the way these songs are arranged. Everybody has something to do, and it's really interesting.
Well, one thing about the designation of chores, shall we say, mm-hmm. in BOC, is I've always, Buck is sort of the music meister, mm-hmm. And always has been. As far as feels go,
mm-hmm.
as far as tempos go, as far as the way a song should go. And you must know that, you know, in the 10 years. You know, I mean, he'll count off a song, or if he feels like something's rushing, you'll see when he turns around.
Yep.
You know, or something like that. So I always bow down to his sensibilities on that. And I have no problem with saying he's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my area is a little different. You know, I write the set list.
Right.
You know, I'm the one who'll come in and say, I think things have to change. I think we have to take this out of the show and put something fresh in, or something different. You know, we have different strengths, and I think that's what makes the formula work.
A lot of people don't realize how difficult it is to write a set list. I mean, because
And that's why I change it a lot.
Right.
And especially with the catalog of 40 years.
Right. I understand when people talk about our set list, because I've been a fan of that for Yes. And I saw Yes like 10 times, you know, mm-hmm. even though I know BLC fans have seen the band. How many times has Miller seen us? Like 500 times or something?
Yeah, 350 probably.
Oh, man. But like I saw Yes 10 times, and that makes me a fanatic. But anyway, but I'm like, why are they doing Owner of a Lonely Heart? I don't want to hear this.
They do it Roundabout.
Oh, Roundabout. Fucking Roundabout. Like, you know, play Nosum du Soleil from Tales of Topographic Ocean, you fucking pussies. You know what I mean? Who wants to hear Roundabout? But then playing with Blue Oyster Cult, I'm like, we have to do Godzilla. It's not a question. It's not a question of, oh, well, let's forego it because, you know, we should really do Beautiful as a Foot on this gig. You can't replace Godzilla with Beautiful as a Foot because that might be someone's first Blue Oyster Cult concert.
Well, you know, that's sort of my turf where I know what kind of show we're doing that night. If it's a casino show, we'll play a certain kind of set. If it's a outdoor rib fest, mm-hmm. you know, we'll do a certain kind of show. Mm-hmm. A city fest.
mm-hmm. You know, biker fest.
If it's a biker fest, might be a different kind of show. If it's like the other night where I actually found the stage manager and I said, how long can we play? Because this is an evening with Blue Oyster Cult. There's no opening act. And I want to do the longest possible show we can until we get thrown out of the room. Because if I was a fan and if I was going to pay good money to see a band I was coming to see with no opening act, I don't want a 90-minute show. I want the max. And so I corralled the guy and I said, you know, what's the latest possible minute we must get off the stage? So we played about 40 minutes beyond what the contract said.
That was a good show.
Yeah, and it was fun because we got to pull out some songs we don't normally play.
What did you guys do?
I don't know. we did Dance in the Ruins. We did Black Blade, which was cool because Trivers was there.
Yes, and I got to pull John out from the behind the stage. He co-wrote the song with me.
We did I Love the Night.
We played The Vigil.
Right. We you know.
And we did a 4-song encore with I Love the Night and
Hot Rails.
Hot Rails. Cities.
It was an excellent show, I'm just telling you.
Yeah, it was good. Except for that guy who ate all the pies.
I couldn't move as quickly as I usually do because I had all that, you know, banana cream in my gut.
They didn't specify that it was sweet pies. It could have been pizzas.
Oh, pizza pies.
Oh. That's what I was thinking. As soon as they said Richie ate all the pies,
That never occurred to me.
Well, if you ate all the pies, it would be all different types of pies.
Including meat pies and shepherd's pies.
Exactly.
Could have been Jamaica meat pies.
So let me ask you.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you a set list question.
Yeah.
Stop talking about how fucking fat I am. I hate everybody.
All hostess pies.
Anyway,
all our Band Geek fans, please start using hashtag all the pies.
All the pies.
Right in your pie hole.
Oh God.
Oh.
What's a song? Now I'm not. This is. We're not promising we're gonna play this song. But what's a song you would like to play again that we haven't played in a while?
I don't know.
You don't know. All right. I can tell you a song I'd like to play again.
Edit question, right?
Well, actually, I don't know if I'd like to play this again because I used to play the most fun song for me to play on bass was Seven Screaming Dizbusters. But after listening to the keyboard part, it sounds like a pain in the ass. So let's retract that question right now. No, but you know, on guitar, I can learn things pretty quick. On keyboard, I always tell Eric, if we're gonna bring this song back, give me like a week or two. Like, don't bring the song back 4 hours before the gig because I need to sit down.
Well,
with
that
the
happens to everybody. I mean, for instance, we did a long sound check the other day mm-hmm. because, and we went over a few songs that we might be playing in the future, but they need more time to sink in, and we got to go over them. And that goes for me with the lyric, and that goes for you for whatever mm-hmm. instrument you're going to play. It goes for everybody. Kasim on bass, you know, he might have played a certain song only once.
Right. So out of the whole catalog, I think my favorite. Now, you wrote Black Blade with Trivers yes. and Michael Moorcock. Correct. Right? Did he write the lyric, or did you guys?
Moorcock wrote the lyric. He just sent it to me in the mail.
Oh wow! I think that is my favorite Eric Vogel song, and I love playing it.
That and Veterans.
Yeah. Yeah. Those, Michael Moorcock.
Oh, those are both a Moorcock lyric.
Now, this might be a question you get asked a lot, but what's your favorite song that you ever wrote? Like, what if you look back and say, this is the song where I like exactly captured what I was going for?
Take Me Away, probably.
Hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
Which is an Aldo Nova music.
Oh, okay.
He handed me... Aldo was managed by the same company that managed us, and we were touring together, you know, because of that. And he handed me a cassette one day, and he says, here's a song from my album that everyone likes it, except they hate the lyric. And he says, so it didn't make the cut. Maybe you can do something with it. So I took it home, and I listened to it, and I liked the music. So I saw him again. I said, give me a blank track so I can come up with a different lyric. And I went home with a yellow pad and wrote the Take Me Away lyric and made a quick demo the next day with my new lyric on it. And that's how that song happened.
Was it called Take Me Away?
Yeah.
So you just took it in that other direction of the sort of sci-fi sort of direction.
Yeah, it was about some psycho killer before.
So you have songs about Elric and the Black Blade.
Yes.
You have songs about sci-fi. So obviously... You're a fanboy, but you were a fanboy before it was a thing.
Well, there's fanboys of all kinds of things, you know. But when you got to remember our age difference here, Rich, is I used to have books that had like art books as a kid that were just blank pages, you know, with a sort of a padded outside, and on the inside were blank pages that you could draw on.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to draw ray guns and explosions, you know. And I got all that from Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers.
Yeah.
Now, that comes from the original serials with Buster Crabbe and Charles Middleton, who played Ming the Merciless in those early serials. And even that is before my time, but they were on TV in New York as serialized on what is now Channel 13.
Mm.
So this is pre-cable. This is, you know, broadcast TV.
Right.
When I was growing up, there was 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13. Obviously, we're listening and all over the world here on the internet, but those were all broadcast channels in New York City.
That's what I had as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we're all New Yorkers, so that makes sense. But you know, people listening all over the country, you know, this is before cable TV, and that's all you got. And, you know, some places in the country, that might have been a lot.
Right.
I've actually gotten the DVDs finally these have come out. The original Buster Crabbe serialized versions all into one on a DVD of the Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers serials. And these were freaking awesome to me as a little boy. You know, to be 8, 9, 10 years old, watching the Martians, you know, Ming the Merciless, attack the Earth. And Flash Gordon, you know, going, you know, who played Flash Gordon's father was the same actor who played Perry White on Superman.
Ah!
So Flash went to the planet Mongo and saved the Earth. And, you know, as a little boy, I just thought it was just freaking awesome. So I was very impressed by all that stuff. I always loved fantasy and science fiction. At age 13, I had an older cousin who gave me a subscription to Fantasy and Science Fiction magazine, which was all short stories. And that's when I discovered Robert Heinlein and Isaac Asimov and Theodore Sturgeon and all the Golden Age sci-fi writers. And from those short stories, I started buying the novels.
What about, what's your favorite, now, TV, movies, video games, books, current fantasy or sci-fi, what are you into now?
Well, obviously Game of Thrones, but... looking forward to Tomorrowland. The trailer looks good.
Hey, we saw George R.R. Martin in the crowd the other day, right?
What?
There was some dude in the front row of a POC show.
Oh, yeah, we did.
With a big white beard and like a cap on. And Eric goes, hey, George R.R. Martin, when's a new fucking book coming out? And he yelled at him on stage.
Actually, Santa Claus. Yeah.
Just probably some poor biker dude in front of the house.
Anne-Marie and I had an experience like that when we saw you guys play at a casino once. We were sitting at a table waiting for you guys to go on, and we saw an elderly gentleman who looked like Santa Claus sitting at a table a couple tables away. And I said, Anne-Marie, go ask that guy what it's like to own Jurassic Park. I thought you were going to say go sit on his lap, and then we were going to have some words.
was that Mohegan Sun?
I think so.
So you sat next to Paul Giamatti on the plane the other day.
I did.
And you guys were talking about this sort of thing.
Well, some guy came. I was trying to be cool and leave him alone. And some guy came over and pestered him. And said, oh, here's my card and blah, 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 blah. So I said, well, you know, I guess that's going to happen to you. He says, yeah, you know, all the time.
Wow.
So I tried to, you know, not bother him, and but it turns out we had gone to adjoining high schools, and we started talking about that, and our even though we're several years apart in age, we started talking about that, and then I told him who I was, and we started talking about, he was very aware of BOC, he knew about Elric, he knew about Michael Moorcock, mm-hmm. and, you know, and then he takes out this magazine 40 in times, and he hands it, he says, you gotta read this. So I had never heard of the magazine, it's like Tales of the Strange. It was like a... It's like all, you know, Bigfoot and beyond, you know, that kind of thing. So... I said, oh, you're one of us. You know? So, you know, he watches all those, you know, Ancient Alien TV shows. And I said,
yeah,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
So we really hit it off. He was a very interesting guy.
The thing I like that you said is you told him about Artemis.
I did.
And the other day I told Anthony Kumi about Artemis, and he seemed interested. Yeah. So are you starting in secret a celebrity Artemis League, and when can I come see that
well,
game?
Well, Anthony lives about 10 minutes from my house. So we got to, and he has a real big, nice place, so we got to like twist his arm to have an Artemis party at his house.
Anthony Kumi, can we please come over and play Artemis on your presumably gigantic television?
Oh, he has a big projection room. He's got a like a theater in his house.
Well, let's see. Okay, we have Eric Bloom.
Bridge.
We have Eric Bloom. We have Paul Giamatti. We have Anthony Cumia. We need three more bridge positions with celebrities. Who do we got? Who do we have access to?
George R.R. Martin.
George, oh, get that guy. Just give him $50 that you're George R.R. Martin for the rest of the day.
Isn't he from Staten Island?
You know
George R.R. Martin? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? When you live on Staten Island, you say everybody's from Staten Island.
No, he grew up here.
But he is
here.
For real. Really?
Yeah, he grew
like
up
that,
here.
He based King's Landing. Yeah.
That's why that show is so filthy.
No, he's from Bayonne, and he used to watch over from
the
from
ships.
Staten Island or something. He used to watch, and he based King's Landing on that.
And he said he used to watch the ships going under the Bayonne Bridge.
I don't believe it.
He would watch the ships going under the Bayonne Bridge. Okay, so
I don't know how that leads to Cersei and her brother fucking each other, but
oh, actually, doesn't one of our friends know Peter Dinklage?
Yes.
So he'll be one of our bridge officers. So we need two more.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I'm
him. You're not coming. You're not allowed. You're gonna ban you from the room.
That's if he gets away from the cock merchant.
That's right.
The cock merchant. That's my favorite line.
Spoilers. Sorry, if you didn't see Game of Thrones, spoilers.
From 3 weeks ago. Get your act together.
Get your act together.
Yeah. The statute of limitations on spoilers is expired. It's there's one question I have to ask you that people will be mad at me if I didn't ask you, and I'm gonna
fire away.
I'm gonna do it, and I apologize in advance.
Hold on, I want to look at the Rangers score. Go ahead.
Do it, Richie.
So what? Curse of the Hidden Mirror. What year did that come out?
I don't know.
Okay, next question. All right. So,
10 years ago or so?
Well, I've been in the band for 10 years. I think that was like 2001.
Okay.
So we had, there was a moment there where we were going to make a new CD, and we had everything was in motion, and we started writing songs, but then something happened. What happened?
Oh, well, that's easy enough to answer. And I have been asked that before, and I've never really given a straight answer.
Right. Ooh.
But because it's Band Geek and it's you, Richie, I'll tell you.
Thank you.
It was your fault.
I'm sorry, Richie.
No, because it was all ready to go. We had the songs, we were ready to record, but then something happened and we had to stop. Can you tell us what that was?
World of Warcraft started.
Oh.
And I decided I couldn't stop playing.
Is that the real answer?
there was a 40-man raid, and we're all at 7 p.m. Everyone had to meet at the fountain.
Ah, yeah. So there goes the recording.
And about 28 people showed up, and we're all talking, and I said, where the fuck are the other 12 people? And one guy says, that Harry had to do his homework.
A couple in another instance.
Okay, all right, but then, so there was that project, but then I think 3 years after that, our manager said we had got another offer, and then
true.
Right, and we had scheduled pre-production rehearsals.
Yes.
But then something happened.
Well, you should know the answer to that as well as I do. That's when Warhammer started.
Oh!
Segway Sam over here.
You and I were in Warhammer together for about a year, and a half.
Sorry, my bad.
And in between was Age of Conan.
Oh, yeah, so that wouldn't have worked.
No.
I played none of those games.
That is an interesting segue. Eric and I have recorded something together. We wrote and recorded a theme song for a new class of character on Warhammer Online, which is a game we were both playing. Yeah. This was fucking cool because this is a game that we were playing. We both got into together because what happens is I'm going to jump around a second, but the real reason that I am in Blue Oyster Cult today is because Eric and I played Star Wars Galaxies together. And would you say that statement is accurate?
Well, it's part of it.
It's most of it.
Let's... You don't want to tell the whole real story.
I don't want to get into that. Take for it.
No,
I'm kidding.
No, we won't talk about, everything that happened in Germany.
Yeah, the hazing.
But we do know that Richie ate all the chocolate in Germany, along with all the pies.
All the chocolate pies.
Oh my God, you're Augustus Gloop.
for all the Band Geek fans out there, Richie joined BOC as a sound man. And during a tour of Europe, Richie and I were on the bus together. And Richie was whining about the fact that all his friends were going to see the Game of Thrones.
I wasn't whining!
All his friends were going to see the Tolkien movie, and was the third movie?
The Return of the King.
The Return of the King, and it was at midnight, and he always went with all his friends at midnight, and that was the next day, and he was going to miss it.
But so, you hate Lord of the Rings!
I don't hate Lord of the Rings. I don't like that you like Lord of the Rings, but go on.
But so I also wanted to go to that movie, and no one else on the bus really cared. We were the only two that really cared. The bus driver overheard us, and he called ahead, and we were going to Stuttgart, and we had a day off. So he found a theater in Germany that actually were playing it in English the next day.
This was kind of creepy, though, because we were just talking about it, and all of a sudden this bus driver, who looked a little like Nosferatu, said, "I have secured you tickets to see the English showing of..." That's terrible German. The Lord of the Rings.
But actually, he did us a solid.
It was awesome.
Yeah. It's good, yeah.
It's good, yeah.
But here's the difference was, in America, there was probably a line for 10 miles to go to that movie.
Right.
Richie and I said, all right, first of all.
I know what you're going to do. I know what you're going to do.
First of all, we both had the DVDs with us of the first movies. So we watched them both, and they were both the extended editions.
You know, it was fucking awesome because in the tour bus, this is one of the few times I got to ride a tour bus with you guys. We were in a real sleeper bus, and over the cab where the driver was, on top of him was this little private lounge with like four seats and then the window. So we were driving through the landscape of Germany, which is gorgeous, like lush green. And we had like a laptop or a portable DVD player, and it was right on the window with like we were in the Shire. Like we were in Lord of the Rings, and we were watching the extended editions. And it was so funny because, you know, if you think about what you pack, you try to pack light because you have to pack for 20 days on the road, but both of us had the giant book-sized box set. I'm like, hey, I got the extended edition. I took it out, and Eric goes in his bag. You know, it's like, I got it too. So not only did we bother bringing it, but both of us had, like, the three-disc extended editions, and we watched all of those motherfuckers on the tour bus.
We watched it all, and then we timed it to just finish it and then go to the theater. So we get down to the theater figuring there's going to be a mile-long line. We get there, we're the only ones there.
It's an English showing.
Yeah, I remember we got there early.
We got there an hour early.
There was no one there.
And we're the only ones there.
Eric goes, you want to get a slice of pizza?
So we went out for German pizza, which was, of course, as good as you would think it would be.
German pizza's phenomenal.
German pizza's delish.
It's a pie, Richie. You know about it.
Yeah, you know about the pie.
Tying it all together.
And we came back to the theater, and there was about four other people there about 10 minutes before.
All from America. It's like, our friends are at home watching the midnight showing, fuckers.
All right, so tell the story on me about going to a movie with me, Rich.
You know, I don't want to exaggerate or anything, but I'll tell this story. Amber, this is one of those stories that gets better, and I improve upon it every time I add some things.
I know about that, big fish.
Well, we go into the theater.
Or you could tell the story.
And it's a small theater. It's really hardly a theater at all. Maybe it had, what, about 40 seats?
It was a really nice theater, actually. It was a small, like, boutique-y sort of art house theater.
And I wouldn't say it was the biggest screen I ever saw. It was a small screen.
Yeah, but we were sitting about 2 feet away from it.
And I turned to Richie and I said, listen, you've never been to a movie with me before. When I go to a movie, I want to see the fucking movie. I don't want to sit here and eat popcorn.
This is verbatim, by the way.
I don't want to eat popcorn. I don't want to hear soda slurping. I don't want to hear the ice rattling around in the cup.
I don't. He said, I don't want to hear you opening the wrapper.
I don't want to hear wrappers opening.
I think this is legitimate. This is a legitimate concern. It is. I'm with you, Eric.
Yes.
I'm with you.
And this new bullshit of eating dinner in the movies. Fuck
that,
is my favorite shit.
Theater. That's my favorite theater.
It's my favorite.
Go somewhere else and eat, then come in and sit down and shut up. Go to the movies to watch the movie and be quiet. That's it. Thank you. But anyway, we went in. I give Richie my spiel.
And he was serious as a motherfucker.
Spiel. There you go.
And that's also German as well.
Yes. So we sit down and Richie goes, okay, I'm fine with that. So we sit down and then proceed, Richie.
Okay, so I, of course, got the big gulp and the Twizzlers. So I'm sitting there, and the movie started, and I'm looking at my Twizzlers. I'm like, I really want one of those right now. So why are you handing me this music? What? Oh, yeah.
Andy, thanks for ruining that, Rich.
Thanks. Thanks, Foley artist Andy. Okay, so I'm sitting there, and I said, I would really like Twizzlers right now. So the movie's going on, and I'm going like, trying very, very carefully not to make any noise. And I'm getting like sideways glances from Eric. He's like, no candy wrappers. Watch the fucking movie. So I'm just like chewing and drinking as quietly as I can. And the movie's very, you know, the movie starts off kind of like, you know, mellow. And I'm just like trying to eat like one little bite at a time of this Twizzler. Because I go to the movies with my dad, who orders like, you know, I'll have a bucket of popcorn, I'll have a big Goobers. Coke, I'll have Goobers, Twizzlers, Raisinets. You know, he has like a smorgasbord in front of him.
But so I'm being very quiet, and I'm worried about making Eric angry after getting this whole warning. And then all of a sudden on the screen, Legolas surfs down an elephant's tail, flies through the air, fires three arrows, kills people, then lands in like a perfect acrobatic stance. And Eric shakes my arm and goes, "That was fucking awesome!" And I looked at him like, what? After that whole speech about not making any noise, he's shaking me. I'm rattling the chair. But that was fucking awesome. So that's my Eric Bloom story. Being in the movies. But we had another funny story. We have a friend who has yet to be on the show, but I have to make it a point to get him on. It's my friend Damien, he's a musician. He should be on the show, but we'll have him on.
I know what story you're
going to tell. Even after Eric, for some reason, Eric still likes watching movies with me. Even though I break all of his rules, he still likes going to movies with me. But we went to go see Kung Fu Hustle in the city.
Oh, God, yes.
And which is one of our shared favorite movies.
Absolutely.
Like, I like a lot of shitty movies, but we can agree that's a masterpiece.
That's awesome.
So we're watching that. And
we went together in your car into Manhattan.
Into Manhattan, right. Yeah. So we saw it at the special theater because you had to go
see
it.
Actually, we were all there, most of us, right?
Yeah.
And we go see it, and me and Eric are just digging the shit out of this movie. It's like Roadrunner meets Jackie Chan. It's unbelievable. And then in the middle of the movie, we look over, and my friend Damien is asleep. He's snoring in the theater.
In Damien fashion.
Yeah. And then the credits roll, the lights come on, and Damien goes, "That's crap. Terrible. Terrible movie. Terrible." And Eric goes, "You didn't see any of it." "Oh, it was crap. I didn't need to be awake to know that was crap."
Well, I've seen people at BOC shows in the front row who were asleep half the show. You know, like we used to have pyro. And, you know, the pyro would go off at the end of the show and they'd wake up and, "Oh, fucking great. You guys are fucking awesome." Well, the drugs hit in the second song. And they were out the whole show.
But the little ending to that Lord of the Rings story is that was, I think, 2013? No, 2003. That was 2003.
2013?
Yeah, I got it mixed up. That was 2003 when I went on tour to Germany with these guys. Or no, 2002, I think.
No, 2003.
And then a year or so later, here's what happened on that. Okay, my thoughts are collected now. We're on the bus, and Eric and I get on the bus, and he and I go, "Wow, there's an Xbox on the bus." At the same time, "You play video games?" "Yeah, I play video games." Eric goes, "Oh, I just played Knights of the Old Republic for the second time." I'm like, "I played that twice too." He goes, "Yeah, I had to play it once to see what the bad ending is, and once to see what the good ending is." So we immediately hit it off. He goes, "Oh, I'm playing this amazing online game called Gemstone. It's amazing. There's like thousands of people playing it." And I'm saying, "Wow, I'm playing an online game also." He goes, "Come to my hotel room. I got to show you this." And he shows me, and I'm expecting to see, he's explaining to me, "Oh, it's amazing. You know, I have this special armor with gems in it, and I have this sword that I crafted, and you go into a room, and I can like tear down a whole wave of enemies with my sword. It's amazing." So I go into his hotel room, and he goes, "Check it out. And the game is text scrolling." And I go, "What the fuck is this?" He goes, "This is my game. It's online. It's amazing." I'm like, "Eric, you gotta play a new game. How old is this game? How old was Gemstone?"
It was, I still, to tell you the truth, I still have a lot of friends from Gemstone 3. I played it for years and years and years. And scrolling text games has a place, but the graphic games still too.
Right. Look, everybody in this room.
Everything in a scrolling text game takes place in your head.
Look, we're all D&D players, so we know all about that. Yeah. But we were talking about and comparing video games, saying, "Oh, in my game I do this. Oh, in my game." Then I saw his game, like, "Where's the pictures? Yeah. Where's the guy?" And he goes, "Oh, you know, we don't really have any of those," because you were playing a Mac back then. You had a Mac.
Maybe.
And I remember because I said, "Eric, you got to get a PC. I said, all the graphic games are on PC. So we went to my friend Vinny.
That's right.
He built you your first PC.
Yeah.
And then you came on Galaxies with us. Star Wars Galaxies.
That's right.
Brief moment of silence. Okay. So
I think we mention it every Band Geek episode.
I'm sure we do. I'm
and we mention it every Band Geek, like we haven't told it about anyone about it before.
Well, I said that the last.
Well, I was one of the a lot of us mm-hmm. played, including your dad.
So we played Star Wars Galaxies, and
how long was the actual prime time? What did we play for? A year, year and a half?
Probably a year and a half, 2 years maybe. And see, the biggest problem that, and the reason why I don't play MMOs anymore, MMO is a massively multiplayer online game, is because you're coordinating your schedule with people. That's what it is. And play style. For example, I'm a casual player. I'll jump on a couple hours a night and just play a little bit and do a quest or two. Eric will start earlier than me and is mainly a solo player, and we'll join a group, but is interested in sort of the solo questing aspect of it. My dad is fucking nuts. He gets on his game at 8 p.m. and won't stop playing until 5 or 6 a.m. and has to be completely hardcore, have every character maxed out. You know, so when you have myself, Eric, and Anne-Marie, whose playstyle is different. Anne-Marie's into exploring. She wants I want to get in and start killing people.
All right. Something
everybody plays different.
Yeah, but I'm just saying everybody plays differently. There's no right way. But the problem is when you're in a group of people that want to have to meet every night to play, it's very difficult to sustain something like that.
And a fourth person you commission is Damien, who's asleep.
Well, that's part of my favorite thing about Galaxies, because we'll all be in a group together and be questing together. Finally, all in the same room, on the same schedule, because that was part of the reason why I had stopped playing those games for a while, because it's like you couldn't coordinate the schedules.
It's very difficult.
It's super difficult. Very and then difficult. It's like, okay, I'm ready to play. 2.5 hours later, you talk to the first person who gives you the quest. You're like, ah! But we'd group up, and Damien, we'd all like get in our speeders and go to wherever we had to go, and we'd see Damien's character just veering off ever so slightly. And then he's 500 kilometers away. 550, 700,
and then,
1,000,
you know,
off
I would say,
planet.
I said, Richie, call Damien on the cell phone.
He's not picking up.
I think he's asleep.
So he would doze, and then his speeder would just go off into the distance.
Are you calling Damien right now?
I might be. I don't know if he'll pick up. He might be asleep.
He used to do that when we played Halo online. Halo!
How do you sleep when you play Halo? I get heart palpitations by watching that game. I can't even play that game. It gives me agita.
I played it on original Xbox.
That's what I
thought. Oh, man. I can't.
I liked it playing solo. I don't know about playing with other people.
He's not going to pick
up.
It's
just, it's too much jumping. It's too much action. I can't process it all.
The problem is you need to not be that good. If you
get it. Oh. You're on speakerphone right now?
Huh?
You're on speakerphone right now. We're doing a Band Geek podcast, and Eric is the guest today.
Cool.
He's saying that you fall asleep in the middle of video games. Do you care to comment on that?
No, I do not.
Hey, Damien?
Comment on it is what I need to say.
Damien?
There's no way he's here.
Tell me to go fuck myself.
That's all right.
Damien took the high ground with you. There's no way you can win. I have the high ground.
You can't win.
We told two stories. One was about you falling asleep in Kung Fu Hustle, then waking up at the credits saying that was a piece of shit. And then,
yep.
he does not deny that one. And then the other story is when you used to veer off cliffs in Galaxies with your speeder going the wrong direction while you sleep.
Material to have to talk about. Wow. Okay. Does it really come to this?
All right. Well, we're going to have you on our next episode so you can come defend yourself.
Oh, that's nice. That's
Stay
good.
Awake.
Okay.
Drink some Red Bull.
Okay. I love you and I'll talk to you later.
All right. You too. See you later.
Bye, Damien.
Bye.
Bye. So, one of my favorite memories of Galaxies is the thing about Galaxies that was great was the social aspect.
The campfire?
Yeah, the campfire. So we're all sitting, and they forced you to, in a really clever way, to role play. Like, after you would fight, you'd get damaged. You'd have to go into a bar and sit there and listen to another player perform music. And while you're there, everybody's like role-playing, typing to each other. And it was really fun. It was like no one minded it because it was a clever way to get people to interact. Where games nowadays, people blow right past the role-playing and grind stats.
And it doesn't feel like they're trying to force you to do it.
It didn't
either,
feel forced. But there was a really cool thing you could do in Galaxies where if you were in the field and you were all fucked up, you could make a campsite and you'd sit there by the fire and everybody would sit in their little camp chair and you'd start typing to each other and talking. So Eric was a Wookiee in the game.
I played a Wookiee.
His name was Kakala. And we're sitting there by the campfire and Eric's in his Wookiee garb. And my dad's got his, you know, specked out armor on. We're all sitting there. And then all of a sudden I see a chat bubble come out of Eric's head. It says, John, ... And my dad goes, yes? Stop staring at my balls. But so
how would that sound in Shriwook? Yes.
So, but it was that during that period when we were playing Galaxies together, I told you, I think on the game, I said, my band is playing all of Rubber Soul by the Beatles. And would you like to come down and see us?
Yeah, well, I didn't know. I knew you as a sound man. I didn't know you as a musician. Mm-hmm. So you said during that time period that you had this band and you were playing all Beatle material here on Staten Island. So you invited me to come down. What was the name of the little bar?
Dock Street.
Yeah. So I came down and I guess, Andy, you were in the band?
Yep.
And I don't remember the other guys. Damien was doing percussion.
That's right.
And I was very impressed. And that was the seed of the idea, you know, when we needed a bass player.
Didn't we also learned Cities?
Oh, yeah, you sat in with us. We played Cities.
And you came up.
But I saw you twice do Beatles.
Oh, probably.
You did all of
Abbey Road too.
I don't know if I saw Abbey Road. Maybe I did.
Maybe.
But I saw you do two Beatles shows. Hmm. And when Danny quit unexpectedly, out of the blue, you know, we had to have a bass player within 3 days or 4 days.
It was 4 days.
I think it was a Tuesday.
You know.
Well, the story goes, and here's a story I've told a lot, but I like telling the story. I was at home sleeping, and you guys must have been at the airport when Danny just dropped the bomb on you.
Well, here's what happened. Bobby and Danny lived out east of me in Long Island, and we had a car service, and it would pick up the furthest out guy first, then the next guy, and then me, and then we'd go to the airport. So I get in the car, and Danny says to me, I'm quitting the band.
Just like that?
Just like that. And I said, okay.
When? Yeah.
And, you know, this weekend, you know, that's it. So I said, okay. So I get to the airport and, you know, we've got to start scratching our heads. So what are we going to do? You know, less than a week and more shows. So Danny had been hired to do that Broadway show in Las Vegas. Yeah. So started thinking about who could cover the bass. I was thinking about bass players. I don't know like where it came from. Or
Woody.
Well, no, Woody did not suggest you.
Huh.
No.
Thanks, Woody.
Jerk. No. Thanks, friend.
No, it came to me independently because I never saw you play bass. And matter of fact, you remember the conversation.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah, I called you like on a, you know, we played that weekend.
Yeah, I think it was a Friday morning or something like that. It was a Sunday morning because I had recital rehearsal that day.
Yeah, so I think we must have played on a Saturday, and I got home, and without telling Buck or Steve or anybody, I just called you on a Sunday morning, just got a light bulb. And I just said, you know, I knew you could play. I didn't know if you could play bass, but I knew you could play. I figured you could play bass. So I said, hi, Rich. You know, hey, what's up? And I said, can you play bass? And you go, yeah, I can play bass. You know, you want me to play bass in Blue Oyster Cult?
That's not what happened. This is what happened.
Yeah.
You said, you called me up. You said,
yeah, can you play bass?
No, you said, hey, Rich. I said, hello? What are you sleeping? Wake up. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. Right? And then you go, and then he said, hey, do you play bass? I said, yeah. Who is this? It's Eric. Do you play bass? Yeah. He goes, do you own a bass? I said, yeah, I own a bass. And then he said, do you rock? I said, yeah. Why? He goes, all right, you're in the band. Click. Go back to bed.
No, I didn't.
Go back to bed. Call me when you wake up.
Oh, I'm starting to believe Eric's story now.
That's how I remember it.
You're having
you have the fairy tale.
You're having a Brian Williams moment.
But I called him back later on. I woke up like an hour later. I said, Ma, I think I just got asked to play with BOC. And she's like, what? She's like, no, you dreamed that. She's like, I was like, no, I think Eric called me like an hour ago. She said, call him back right now. So I called you back. He said, yeah, Friday's first gig. It's Sunday. I was like, well, okay, yeah, sure. He goes, all right, I'm gonna email you a list of 18 songs that we're going to play. Okay. So I couldn't even start working on them because I had recital rehearsal all day. But I got home that night and I told Eric, like, how do you do with the songs? And I didn't want him to know that I couldn't start working. I'm like, I got him down, no problem. He goes, already? Goes, okay, here's four more songs that we should do. So now I'm going, fuck, what did I just do to myself? So now I had 22 songs to learn in 4 days. And I practiced like I never practiced before in my life. It was crazy. But you know what? It was a fun time. It was really fun. And I remember you and I were hanging out at the airport with Bobby. And we started going off on our Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Galaxies thing that we always talk about. And Bobby goes to Eric, you must be so happy to have another nerd in the band. Bobby goes to me, it's great. He's got someone to talk to now. He never had anyone to talk to about all this nerd stuff. And I one of the funny things, Anne-Marie's not in the room now, so I'm going to, of course, tell the story. But
yeah, of course.
When I first started dating Anne-Marie, I introduced her to Bobby, and he goes, wow, that's your girlfriend? I go, yeah. He goes, she knows about all the things you do with the lightsabers and all that weird shit you do. I was like, yeah. But I was hazed when I first joined, and this is how I was hazed. We were sitting at a hotel room. We were sitting in a hotel lobby. We're talking, me, Bobby, and Eric, and my back is to the desk. And Eric goes, Richie, don't turn around. Two hot chicks just walked in. You're in a rock band now. You have to bring them up to your hotel room. I said, okay. He goes, look, no, don't turn around yet. I'm going to tell you what to say. Just go up there and tell them that you're going to watch a movie in the room. You're in the band, and you're going to come up to your room and watch a movie. So I'm saying, okay. Yeah, I've never done anything like this before. So I muster up the courage. I get up. I start walking to the front desk. And there are two 50-year-old women who were about 400 pounds each at the front desk. Right? And I turn right around, and Eric's beat red. Bobby's laughing. He goes, you're in the band for 5 minutes, and I got you. I got you. And he pranked me like that several times. I only played 5 gigs with Bobby because Bobby was also leaving around that time. Because that's what Jules joined 5 days after that. 5 gigs after that.
I don't remember.
So I had 5 gigs with him, and he fucked with me every single day of those five gigs. It was a magical time. Anyway, we're gonna start. We're gonna start wrapping it up now.
I have to game of war. I have to get up a shield by midnight.
Well, that's what I was gonna ask you. That was my last question for you. What game are you playing now?
Game of War. I have to get up a shield by midnight.
He's not joking.
You're playing a mobile game. That's it. No computer game.
Well, let me think about that. I'm playing Clash of Clans a little bit because my son is.
So is it two mobile games?
Yeah. I'm not real serious about it. I'm just sort of dabbling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not serious about either one too much. I like there's two King's Isles games that I like. That I sort of dabble with. I was more serious in the past, but I still have the accounts. They're actually family games. Kingsisle.com. It's they're sort of G-rated games. Wizard 101 and Pirate 101.
Now you're in one of those games, right?
Yeah, I am. actually. I do have a little character that I went down to the home office there in Texas and wrote a quest. And they put me in there. I think I'm playing a bear.
Oh, the name of the, I remember this. The name of the quest is "Does a bear sit in the woods?"
Yes. Yes. I wrote the quest and I wrote that name, and I think you know, they use my name in there. It's a, there's a blue oyster called Quest in the game. It, you know, we, I'm friendly with nice. The with the people.
So,
there.
Are you more excited about writing a quest in a game than writing a song at this point? Because I know I would be.
They're very nice people, and it's a very very successful game. Because it's kind of G-rated and people can, you know, young people, very young people can play, and parents can play with the kids, and it's a good game. I especially like the Pirate 101. That's a, it's a turn-based game.
What's the next game you're looking forward to? Like, what's on the horizon that you, well, that you have to play?
Well, I played for quite a while. I played the Elder Scrolls Online. Mm. That's the last MMO I played, and it just went free to play. And
which is sort of the kiss of death sometimes for
it,
you.
It, I think it was for me. I sort of stopped playing. Mm. But I had characters maxed out and everything, and I just sort of lost interest. So I have my eyes open, you know, because I used to write for a gaming magazine called Massive Online Gamer. Mm-hmm. And when that magazine fizzled, during the time I was writing for that magazine, I got on a mailing list for a lot of gaming company PR people. Mm-hmm. So I'm still on their list. So I get these like gaming companies sending me beta invitations.
Nice.
So every once in a while I'll get like a preview of upcoming games. So there seems to be some stuff coming down the road. What do you hear? What's, you know?
I've been, I have a love-hate relationship with MMOs because it's the model of an MMO is the dangling carrot. This unattainable thing you'll never get to, but is almost like, oh, the game's going to start getting fun once I have this armor. Oh, once I have this sword or this quest item. Oh, once I get to this level. It's never like, I feel like I never enjoy the journey. It's always about a destination, but the destination ultimately leaves you unfulfilled.
And then you have to wait for the next, next expansion.
Right. I mean, I
heard World of Warcraft just took a huge hit, like millions of people left.
What I realize is I don't like MMOs. I like playing games with my friends. And that's what attracted me to Artemis so much.
Well, that's one of the things that Emery just mentioned.
Yeah.
It's so hard with all to get the same schedule and to cut out the time where everybody can actually get together in real time and do something together.
That's what attracts me to MMOs. So I like games like Diablo, which is not much of a game, really. It's you beat the shit out of bad guys, waves and waves of them. But I like it because I can play with my friends. I mean, I'm also more of a console gamer these days, so I'm really looking forward to Arkham Knight. And I already
You like anything Batman.
Yeah, and anything Star Wars, because I'm going to pre-order the new Battlefront game, which looks fucking awesome. And another game, which I'm almost tempted to buy a new computer and an Oculus for, is called Star Citizen. Actually, there's this website, Twitch, that I really love. It's an app, too. And every time I get the itch to go play an MMO again, I watch it, and I'll say, ooh, look at this MMO that's out that I want to play. And I'll see someone waiting around for their friends for 45 minutes. or someone
inventory, yeah,
doing inventory. Like, oh, I have too many elf roots in my inventory. I guess I have to go sell some of these. I'm like,
someone's been playing Dragon Age.
Yeah. No, that's what it's like. And I said, wow, so when you play an MMO, you spend about 5% of the time having fun, kick-ass, action-filled segments, and 95% of the time doing bullshit and waiting.
I have to go back to town to sell all these extra swords.
Yeah, I can't. I don't have the time for it anymore. But
I still like it. I wish it was some way to make it better.
Well, I think they're getting closer. I think, you know, there are games like, I thought Warhammer was very good.
It really was excellent.
It's a shame that it ended, but like, I liked that you could just walk into instances and then you were automatically part of like a area quest that you can just choose to help people.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Age of Conan was really a very good game. I think that's still going. I like the fact of the they had a very interesting mechanic where you could touch the keys on the keyboard and a left hit yes. was a left swing.
It was a rock, paper, scissors thing. Yeah. That they had like this attack overrides this attack, and it was very, very strategic and really cool. But I want to get back to, and I'm gonna take us out with this one story.
Well, this is a band geek, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Well, no, this is great. when we were playing Warhammer, and I touched on this before, Eric, and I love that you do this, because I wouldn't even think to do this. Like, when I'm playing something and I really like it, I don't even think to get involved with it. But Eric, I mean, this is, Eric sort of inspired me to do the thing we did with Artemis, where I called the guy who made Artemis.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But Eric called or emailed the Mythic Studios, who made Warhammer Online, and said, "Hey, I'm Eric Bloom. I love your game. Would love to do something with you." And they bit. And it said, "Okay, great." And they flew me and Eric down to their studio. It was probably one of the coolest memories I have of anything.
It was great.
We saw how they make a video game. Wow. They were just, and basically it's a bunch of fat guys at desks staring at computer screens. No, I'm kidding. But no, it's really a lot of people staring at desks, staring at computers at desks. But
yeah, there are, you know, a lot of people at terminals writing code.
Yeah, there's code. There's people like, okay, I'm making a bench. You know what I mean? Like, it's someone just like drawing a bench.
Not everyone gets the glory. Someone has to make the bench.
Right. And then there's they had like a little motion capture area. They had a recording area like for sound effects. And it was great. And we got to sit in the office of the lead game designer. And they said, "So, what do you think of the game?" And we did like the Mr. Costanza airing of the grievances. Eric's like, "Well, you know, when I go to press this button, there's a 2-second delay." And then, and basically, it was funny because I said, "You know, I'm hiding behind rocks and people are still shooting me." And they explained to me that the problem with MMOs is they're not Twitch-based. So on your screen, you might be behind a rock, but according to the server, you're not behind the rock yet. So you're still getting hit. So it's this whole weird thing, and they sort of pushed back the veil. But then we got to do our part of the deal, our part of the bargain was they showed us around, but they flew us out. We wrote a song together about the Slayer, which I'm going to play now. And it was cool because they said, "We want it to be sort of Iron Maiden-y, right?" So, and this was a really cool collaboration we did, because I wrote this thing that was like super cock rock, you know, harmonized guitars. Mm-hmm. And Eric wrote this like really cool, like druidy sort of thing, like this like doomy, like Sabbath-y kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I played mine. I was like, "This is what they want." Eric's like, "No, it's not. This is what they want." And we argued about it. And then we got there and they're like, "We like them both. Do them both." So we put both ideas in the song. So Eric's idea is that, oh, and so that whole like intro, mm-hmm. which it's really like a Spinal Tap song, right? Now that I think about it,
it's not Sabbath or Iron Maiden.
Yeah, it's not. We missed the mark totally and made a Spinal Tap song, but then it kicks into the harmonized guitar thing.
Also, one of their developers was a decent drummer, and he drummed on it.
Right, right, and he, you know, helped us write some of the song. Like, they had one of their writers doing the song, and their guy who was their composer. He played drums. We went to a studio,
oh, nice.
And we did the whole thing. We did the vocals at my house, and like it was awesome. And so I'm going to play that at the end. Is that cool with
sure,
you?
Why not?
I'd like to thank our special guest, Eric Bloom.
Yay!
What's the hockey score, Eric?
The Rangers
win?
Are winning 2-1. All but right. Of course, when this show, you'll know the real score when this probably goes live. Yeah, 2-1 still.
Yeah, Rangers.
Nice. It's like that episode of Flash when we're in the future, but we're really in the past. But we're in the future.
That's okay.
Past,
you know,
future.
One of the guys in the Rangers wears a mask.
Ah, is that the goalie?
Yeah, the goalie.
I knew that. I knew something. With me today was my co-host Jared Pressman.
Please don't forget # all the pies.
Fuck you.
Oh yeah!
Yay!
Andy Escalise.
Escalise.
Thank you.
My wife Anne Marie.
Hello. Goodbye.
And Andy's wife
goodbye.
Brandy.
Goodbye.
Thanks
signing
for listening.
Off.
Here is Kiss My Ex.
Yeah.
While I drink my beer.
That's right. All right, nice. Thanks for listening.
Been killing so long, I don't feel a thing. Been trying to die. my dooming to bring. Fighting so hard the oath that I swore. Been searching so long for death's open door.